Welcome to Trail Bites for the week of November 5th, 2020. I'm Gavin Jackson, and this mini-pod is a companion piece to the South Carolina Lead. We're doing this to help keep you up to speed on what is happening on the campaign trail in the Palmetto State. Campaign trail, which is now over. This one, at least. Well, election 2020 has come and gone, and though ballots are still being counted in some states, we have definitive winners here in the Palmetto State. Senator Lindsey Graham won a fourth Senate term, Nancy Mace flipped the first congressional district back to Republican control, and Republicans have made gains in the state house. Now, in the interest of time and people's sanity, I'm going to give you a good-sized excerpt of the conversation I had on This Week in South Carolina with Meg Kennard of the Associated Press and Jamie Lovegrove of the Post and Courier. Now, it's not the full episode, so you still have to watch, and if you already check out the show on Fridays at 7:30 p.m., well, I apologize for the redundancy, but it's a good conversation worth hearing twice. So here you go. I want to lead off just with really quick the winners, the losers, and the oh my God moments we saw the past few days here. The winners, I would say, with South Carolina Republicans and voter turnout. Losers, Democrats and big money donors. Our oh my God moment would be hand counting some 14,000 ballots in Dorchester County. And of course, some slow counting in places like Richland, Horry, and Beaufort. Not too much new there. But let's start off with what we saw going on up and down the ballot. And I want to start with you, Meg. Just tell me a little bit about the most hyped Senate race that we've all been covering. We're talking about Lindsey Graham and Jamie Harrison there. The AP called that race for Graham nearly three hours after polls closed there. What did Graham do, Meg, in your opinion, from what you saw? What did he do to secure that fourth term?
I think there are a couple of things that you can point to when you look at how did the Graham campaign pull this off? How did Lindsey Graham do this? The first of those is the existing framework that's present here in South Carolina for Republicans. We've talked a lot of times, Republicans control all statewide offices here, the legislature, and most of Congress. So there's a lot to tap into in terms of resources, in terms of already existing grassroots operations that particularly for a statewide campaign come in very, very handy. The second, and this is something that I talked to Senator Graham at length about when I was on the campaign bus with him, is his ability to develop a fundraising apparatus to meet that of Jamie Harrison. National Democrats honed their attention in on this race, brought in a lot of money, and the Graham campaign had to figure out how do we compete with that? And they did. And so to be able to do that and to be able to match that money on his side was incredibly important. But the third piece of this, and we all saw this over the weekend on the campaign trail, was Senator Graham really doing what people really like him for. He was himself. He got back to that. You know, we saw it during the 2018 governor's race, too. But that personal campaigning side of the jokes and the affability and really directly relating to people all around the state on his bus tour, that reminded people of all the things that he says, you know, he really wants to do is to take their messages back to Washington. And it really seemed to be resonating with a lot of the folks, these hundreds of people that we would see come out to just see him make a 20-minute stop and move on. So it's a lot of different things. But I think that the Graham campaign really was able to harness all three of those and bring in a pretty significant victory on Tuesday.
And Jamie, we'll get into the Harrison campaign, what the Democrats did in a moment, but tell me a little bit about what the Republicans did. They turned out massive amounts of voters. They had a huge ground game going there. We heard from the state party chairman, Drew McKissick, the other day, just talking about just how much went into winning this go-around. And we'll talk about down-ballot races, but tell me about what their operation was looking like and how they did this from that perspective.
Yeah, the ground game mismatch here was very significant. You know, on the airwaves, especially to the last couple months of the race, because of, you know, what Meg was saying about how Lindsey was able to raise significant amounts of his own money to compete with Jamie, you know, on TV, on digital, on advertising, they were able to run fairly close to neck and neck. You know, Jamie Harrison may have been spending a little bit more, but Senator Graham was also spending a ton of money, and Republicans were spending a ton of money. But on the ground, Democrats did not, until really the last month of the race, send folks out to go knock on doors for the most part. They were more hesitant than Republicans were about the health risks of the coronavirus. They, you know, Trav Robertson, South Carolina Democratic Party chairman, yesterday said that, you know, they didn't want to risk the health of their staff, their volunteers, or the voters as they were going door to door. The Republicans said that they were able to do it safely, and they had no qualms about doing it. And they kept doing it, you know, pretty much from as soon as the state began to open back up. Drew McKissick said that they had five times the biggest get out the vote, turnout, ground game operation the party has ever had in South Carolina. And they've already, of course, South Carolina Republicans, you know, have dominated the state for well over a decade now. And yet, even compared to those previous cycles, they were significantly stepping it up. You know, campaigns really change things on the margins. And it's hard to imagine that even a Democratic ground game that had matched up with the Republican one would have been able to close what is now looking to be a double-digit difference between these two candidates. You know, what helped Republicans and what hurt Democrats, and Republicans were saying this, frankly, for the entire campaign, was South Carolina fundamentally has more ideologically conservative-leaning voters than liberal-leaning voters. And, you know, particularly as the National Democratic Party has gotten more progressive over the years, it's gotten harder to convince conservative voters to you know, split their tickets, even if they vote for Trump at the presidential level, to vote for Democrats down ballot. You know, we're seeing much less of that as the years go on. And you know, Trump remains, of course, very popular among huge swaths of South Carolina. And, you know, he and Senator Graham both had coattails for the rest of the party.
Meg, I want to follow back on to that, what Jamie was talking about and how they made this work. And we'll look at the flip side, look at the Democrats, look at Jamie Harrison's campaign. Obviously, you know, a lot of national attention coming in there. But what did they do right? I mean, we can point to that national attention, but what, you know, what didn't fall in their favor? Obviously, we're talking about turnout here and being a fundamentally Republican state, looking at a difference of about 260,000 votes right there going, you know, for the Republicans. What was going on in the Harrison campaign, and maybe what more did they need besides, obviously, the voters to turn out?
Clearly, most evidently, and first off, the thing they did right was fundraising. They clearly figured out how to tap into, as Jamie was noting, national Democratic networks, as well as folks here in South Carolina. That was one of the things that Jamie Harrison said he could bring to this race from the jump, was that he had national Democratic connections because of his time with the DNC and also representing the South Carolina Democratic Party during a very active 2016 presidential cycle. So he said he had those connections where he could really work to develop that fundraising, and he did, to the tune of $130 million at the end of the day. But the second thing that I think they also had going in their favor was, and it, you know, maybe it didn't end up working electorally for their favor, was, though, the attention, the ability. You know, a lot of candidates who've never actually run for any elected office have to spend a really long time introducing themselves. And that can happen even up until election day. They feel like, especially against an incumbent, they have quite a deficit to make up in terms of people actually knowing their names. I think it's safe to say that anyone in South Carolina, down to my 9-year-old, knew who Jamie Harrison was by the time the election rolled around because of all of these ads that he had been able to run on television and on digital spaces. So certainly getting out his biography and making sure that people knew his name was something they did very well from the beginning. And even though it didn't work out in his favor for the election for this time, now, going forward, for anything else he decides to do, Jamie Harrison is not a stranger. People already know his name. They know most of his story. And so from that aspect, he's already built a sizable political biography if he decides to go for another office in the future.
And Jamie, just to jump on that as well, looking at what the Harrison campaign did well, what didn't work in their favor, is this a plus when we look at Democrats running statewide? I mean, you're talking about a double-digit difference there. And spending more than $120 million. And then you look at previous statewide races, you know, most notably the governor's race with James Smith, and that was of a shorter margin. Obviously, that wasn't in a presidential election year, so things do change. But what can the Democrats take away from this race?
You know, when I talked to Jamie on Tuesday morning, as he was going around to polling locations around Columbia, of course, he didn't think at that point that he was going to lose by double digits. I think he did. He was beginning to suspect that it was not quite going to go his way that day. And so he was starting to lay out the narrative, the case that he had helped build South Carolina Democratic politics for the future. And his case for that was, you know, the party infrastructure is stronger than it has been an extremely long time. There is a whole new generation of campaign operatives who have worked on his campaign that may stay in South Carolina and try to build the Democratic Party. They have built a humongous national email fundraising list that it could benefit them for many, many years to come. I mean, it rivals just about any presidential campaign outside of probably Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. And so those are all helpful. The flip side is that And I started to hear Democrats talking about this as we approached Election Day, kind of quietly. Their one big fear was that if he did lose, and they really did not expect him to lose by this much, was that going to dissuade national organizations, national donors, Democrats around the country from investing in South Carolina in the future? Because if 130 million plus can't do it, you know, what can? And, you know, the answer to that in Drew McKissick's mind, in the mind of the South Carolina Republican Party chairman, is there is no amount of money that can turn South Carolina blue. It is just too fundamentally conservative. And in some ways, by bringing all the attention that he did, he reminded Republican voters that, you know, this, they can't get complacent, and they all showed up in huge numbers on Tuesday. I would just finally say that one thing that the Democrats have done well is recruiting these candidates with really inspiring life stories. Jamie Harrison, James Smith, as you mentioned, you know, these are as good of a candidate recruits as you could hope for in South Carolina for Democrats. Because what they're trying to do is make this more about character, make this more about personalities, and less about some of these more divisive policies. Because again, they know as well as we do that there are so many conservative voters in South Carolina. The problem is, every single time we get into the last 2 months of the election, the Republican candidates are really good at reminding voters about the policy consequences of these elections. And Lindsey Graham kept hammering home the fact that this is not a personality contest. You may not like me as a guy. I hope you do. But if you don't forget about control of the Senate and conservative judges and conservative policies. And that drives voters to the polls at the end of the day.
Now, but Meg, I want to talk about SCO1. We saw it flip back red after 40 years. You know, it flipped blue in 2018 with Joe Cunningham. Nancy Mace flipped that seat back there. Kind of tell us what happened there and how she was able to do that.
Sure. I think that one of the biggest things that helped Nancy Mace in this district was the fact that this is a presidential election year. 2018 was not, when that district flipped back to blue control. And so this year, there were a lot of voters coming out to support President Trump. And Nancy reminded folks, not as often as you might think, but she did point out that she was supported by President Trump. She had worked on his campaign, and people coming out to vote for president were voting for her as the Republican nominee in the first district. She also has a pretty fascinating biography, as we've talked about with Jamie Harrison as well, the first woman to graduate from the Citadel. She often talked about the Waffle House where she worked when she dropped out of high school. We were there yesterday in the parking lot. She was kind of wrapping up her campaign there. So a lot of things working in her favor, a good story, and also a good candidacy in terms of, in Republicans' eyes, being somebody that the president could be counting on if he is still the president when the next Congress is sworn in.
And Jamie, that was part of this big sweep by Republicans. Talking about SCO1, that was something they had been targeting since, you know, day one in 2018 after Election Day. Weigh in on that for me, too, and then also maybe lead into a little bit of what we saw at the State House.
Yeah, well, in terms of the Lowcountry, you know, Charleston continues this leftward trend. It is really a pretty blue county at this point. But as Chairman McKissick said on the Republican side, you know, they don't necessarily need Charleston to win that district because of just how red some of the surrounding areas are in Beaufort and other parts of the district. And we saw this huge turnout in those redder parts of the district. You know, there was in some ways it snuck up on them in 2018, and there was no way that that was going to happen this time. All of their voters were highly plugged into this race, both at the presidential level and the congressional level. And so they turned out and they were able to make sure that Charleston was not able to basically decide the outcome of the election. But as we look, you know, elsewhere around the state, it's frankly much bleaker for Democrats. You know, there are gains that Republicans are making in places like Horry County, in places like York County, and even in parts of the Lowcountry, the PD in general. So, you know, they had a number of state Senate districts they were hoping to flip in the Lowcountry. They were not able to do it for a single one. Meanwhile, they lost two upstate state senators, Floyd Nicholson of Greenwood and Glenn Reese of Spartanburg. And perhaps most significantly of all, Vincent Shaheen of Camden, the 2010 and 2014 gubernatorial nominee, you know, one of the most esteemed Democratic legislators in the state house. The big picture that's beyond the individuals is Republicans are going to enter redistricting with a stronger, in the strongest position they've been in modern history. And that is going to put them in an incredibly advantageous position to draw these districts in a way that is going to ensure their control, their dominance of South Carolina politics for the next decade. You know, Trav Robertson, the South Carolina Democratic Party chairman, acknowledged yesterday this kind of red wave that we saw this year could not have come at a less opportune time for them, and is going to make it, frankly, very difficult for them to make the state more competitive in the years ahead.
That's the campaign trail for 2020, folks. We've gone from the presidential primary up through November 3rd, and we're glad you've tagged along with us. And yes, next stop is 2022. Say it with me, folks. Nothing? Not even an air horn? Burp, burp. Thank you. It will be here before you know it, folks, and we'll, of course, be right there with you to bring you everything you need to know to make the informed decisions that matter. And you can always tell us about how your voting experience went this week, who you voted for, what your top issues were. We want to know. Leave us a message, 803-563-7169. And thanks again to everyone who sent us Election Day sticker selfies. You can also follow me on Twitter at Gavin Jackson. And let us know your thoughts on our Twitter at SC Lead Pod. You can also follow us with the same handle on Instagram for photos from the campaign trail. Campaign Trail Bites is a production of the South Carolina Lead. I'm Gavin Jackson.